He has his own podcast. What is it, y'all? Get my shit together.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good night. Welcome to the Getting My Act Together podcast for Friday. Friday. Gotta get down. Must get down. It is imperative to get down on Friday. Friday, October 13th. This podcast is brought to you by Rebecca Black, the author, composer, performer. She does it all. She's like Taylor Swift. She was just ahead of her time. Welcome to Getting My Act Together podcast for Friday, October 13, 2023. I hope you have a big weekend in store. I hope your week is more or less at an end. I hope when you're listening to this, you know there is one person in the world, and that is your host talking to you directly, who understands what you're going through. I might not know exactly what it is, but I understand and I empathize. I'm on your side. You know why? Because I'll take the time. I'll listen. I won't solve your problems. I'll hear them out. I won't judge you. I will listen without judgment. Whatever it is that you're feeling, I felt it. Whatever it is you're going through, I've been through it, or at least something that resembles it. And so have lots of other people, and you are not alone. I know that. I know that to be true. So I hope you have a great weekend in store. I hope that you are going to come see me do stand-up comedy tonight in two places in San Diego that will represent, I don't know, something like my fifth stand-up set in San Diego in 1 week, which is, you know, by Atlanta standards, nothing, but for San Diego, it's a whales you know what. There's no stage time out here. How do these people get so mediocre? God, what an asshole I am. I've lived in this place for 2 months, and I sure have a lot of opinions about it. Well, that's the great thing about stand-up comedy, as you've probably heard me say, is you don't have to do it very... You can just show up anywhere. You can just start doing stand-up comedy and then just have a bunch of opinions and self-righteousness about it. A lot of people do that. Maybe every comic who does that. You can just show up and go, these people suck. Yeah, so do I. I'm not talking about me in San Diego. I'm speaking generally. You can just be very self-righteous about... That person does this, this person does that. And it's a phenomenon that recurs, I've observed. I've observed it recur. There, am I using that word correct? Yeah, I didn't say reoccur, which you could say, but I said recurs. It's a whole nother ballgame. Where comics who are not very good are talking ill, sometimes on stage, about other comics not being very good. And they're both right. There is no stage time in this city that I have seen. I have to find a room. I have to find a place. I have a couple ideas in mind. What makes it challenging is, unlike in Atlanta, where I may have had personal relationships with people and said, hey, why don't we do a show at your place? Or why don't we do... I don't have any relationships out here. I don't have any, like, with venues. I'm making, you know, inroads, but I don't have time to go. You like, so if I know Limerick existed and Limerick got passed to me. The Pizza Mic years ago was a little more entrepreneurial. I went in there on a Sunday afternoon. I was like, hey, there's nobody here. Do you guys want to have a terrible open mic, which will involve physical altercations with Philadelphia Eagles fans? And they were like, absolutely, let's do that. So that was entrepreneurial. I'm engaging the same muscles in trying to find a room here in San Diego, driving around a little bit on a Tuesday night, looking around at bars that are, you know, less than fully populated, thinking about how could I replicate the Limerick situation. And I'm not sure that I can, but I'm still trying. I'm just, I don't know the people. So any reach out to the people who own these venues or run these venues would be very much a cold call. So... There's not a lot of stage time here. I've even toyed with the idea of, like, can I scare up, you know, a few friends and open a quotation comedy club? You know, I have some moneyed friends. I have some friends who are in the cabaret industry. To get a cabaret license, I would be that guy. I would frankly open a comedy club just so I could have stage time. I have become what I have beheld. I would have hated that guy. Fucking rich guy gonna open a club and take up the time. Yeah, exactly. Maybe not rich, but I would do it like the Laughing Skull. I would do show. I would do open mics Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I would charge people. You know what I would do, San Diego Comedy? I would pre-book the goddamn shows. I would make the open mic a special thing so people who want to try stand-up comedy can come do it. They can know when they're going to go up. They can practice their material, or as their relatives call it, their skits. They can be prepared. They can tell people, hey, I'm going to do comedy in 2 weeks at 8 o'clock at this venue that this old guy owns with his moneyed backers. How can anyone come see you do comedy? And I'm not talking about for quote unquote real comics who don't have friends, who are not going to, and I mean that the best, most flattering way, who are not going to ever bring any people around them to their shows, and except for their first time they ever do it, and then their friends will go back to their lives, and then the comic will find out if they are a quote-unquote real comic who wants to stick with it or not. I don't expect comics to bring people, but if you have comic curious, comic adjacent, the people who lose their fantasy football pool, the people who, you know, their office people or their coworkers encourage them to go up, you know, you get them to bring out 5 or 10 people, and then all of a sudden you have a little bit of a show. And you can't do that. You know what it is, now that I think about it? The bucket is not for the comedy curious. The bucket is for the diehards who just want to get, I don't know what the fuck they want to do. They would try to get stage time is what they want to try to do. Make it, there's no, come on, guys. There's no comedy for the comedy curious, for people who want to dip a toe in. Hey, I'm going to go to that club like the Laughing Skull in Atlanta, and I'm going to do my first time ever going on stage. I'm going to be in front of 75, 80 people. It's going to be hot, and that'll tell me if I can do it, if I feel like, if I get it, that sort of thing. San Diego, it's just, and again, respect, it's just for the grinders, because just about every show is a bucket list where you don't know if you're ever going to get on. You've heard me talk about this. 60 people call in, 60 people tear off a piece of paper, throw their name in the bucket, and then 15, 18 of them get pulled out. And the other 32, 42, whatever it is, sit with their hands silently under their rear ends with their thumbs firmly lodged up their asses. It's a waste of time. The other thing that's a minor point, but is a point nonetheless for newer comics, is if you get called in a bucket situation, you're scrambling with anxiety. First of all, you're scrambling with anxiety. Are they going to call my name? And then when they do, it's like, oh, fuck, I am up next. What am I going to say? As opposed to, hey, your spot, and I get it. I like the things that are hard. I told you I'm drawn to the bucket, and making people sit through the whole damn show is it's a hard thing that doesn't. You know what I don't like about it? I'm not sure I see the yield. I'm not sure how it steel sharpens steel. And I know this is an all insight. You know what? I think today, if you're not interested in stand up comedy, I'm gonna cut you loose. It's Friday the 13th. Go get into some trouble. Don't wear a rubber. I'm going to cut you loose. Today is just going to be all stand-up milling about open mic and the effectiveness of a bucket list. I don't think the bucket list does anything. Aside from randomizing who's going to get up. But let's start at the top of the pyramid. The venue wants a good show, even if it's an open mic. So the venue wants everybody to do well. They want everybody to do well because that means everybody in the room has a good time. And they'll come back and they'll associate, as we do, as Maya Angelou said, people won't remember what you said or what you did, but they will remember how you felt. And if everybody does their sets well and has a good time, people are going to associate that with your club, your place, whatever it is. So give them 2 or 3 weeks notice that they're going to do a spot. They will have that material done if they care, and they're really like trying to protect themselves from bombing. They'll have it done as well as they can. So they're ready for that in San Diego, 3 minutes. But in my hypothetical club, 4 minutes. They'll do their time. They'll do it as well as they can. It won't be them sitting in a room for 45 minutes, anxiously figuring, trying to see if they're going to get up each time the guy calls the bucket after each performer. And yeah, it's kind of coincidental that the one I went to last night, wow, it seems like these guys get pulled a lot. I've seen them get pulled at other places. This is totally random, isn't it? Oh, wow, they all work at each other's clubs and they're getting up. That's the way it's supposed to be. I get that. There's, what's the harm in letting giving people the chance to do their best? That's not stand-up comedy. That's what it is. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting softer in my old age. The guy, and it is the guy. I was in a room last night, a club, which is a great club. I mean, if the room were like, if you were headlining there, it's tight, it's low, it's packed. I'm not gonna say the name of it until I'm headlining there or doing a show there. But it I was like, oh, this is a comedy club. It wasn't freezing. The tables were right on the stage. It was really intimate. And it was all men. I saw one woman in the crowd out of 70. And that's maybe, like, say, 50. Let's say this. Let's say there were 50 people in the audience. 45 of them probably. 40 of them at least were comics. Maybe there were a few Navy dudes there. And there was one woman that I saw. And then I saw the server. So I would say that 2% of the population, maybe 1%, 2% of the population in this room last night was female. And it matters, dude. It matters. It sucks when it's all men. Well, I get it, women. Like, well, this is kind of a, you know, a snake eating its tail. Well, you shouldn't have eaten the fruit, and we wouldn't be in this place in this situation. Fucked it all back with that snake and everything. Anyway, guys just sitting around waiting to do their spots, waiting to see if they get a spot. And then when they hear they're going to get a spot, have 3 minutes to show what in the dark. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, I want to do that. This, I mean, you have to be able to do that if you want to be a stand-up comic, but also it's not setting people up to be successful. So why not just pre-book the mics and then say, hey, you're going to be on in a week. You can bring your friend. I guess the initial push would be you'd have to socialize it to the comedy curious. Like I said, the fantasy football loser and that sort of thing. The bucket, or if you're going to do a bucket, give me like do it like the Comedy Store at least, where they pull the names at like 4 o'clock, but you don't have to be there until 7 or 7:30 or something like that. Then it's like you can get on with your life. Am I beating a dead horse here? You can get on with your life. You know, but these places, I did it last night. I did not know this was happening. I thought I was going to get a spot. I thought everybody gets up. And then the guy has the bucket on stage and just calls the first two names. Also, let's be clear. I said there were 2% women. It's all men. And it's all straight dudes, which is why I heard the N-word more than once. And apparently someone they were talking about last week, some dude got loose with the N-word. I don't know how this happens. I mean, I know how it happens because it's not Atlanta where there is an environment that will say that is not acceptable and you'll get checked. That doesn't happen. But what happens And this is my, I'll say this to my straight white brethren, straight white male brethren. When there are only people that look like you and sound like you, you don't know how broad your material generalizes. You don't know if you're just working it just works with people who have, similar histories and context, which is maybe if you're Northern European, what you're going for, the purity of the mic. But I've seen maybe one gay performer since I've been in San Diego, maybe. And might not have even been gay, might have just been trans. I'm not even sure. I'm not sure I've seen a gay person. I've seen black people. What am I doing here? I'm identifying the marginalized. What I'm doing is saying, if you're a straight white male and you're only performing for straight white males, you're not getting enough feedback about what you're doing. As a result, and this is where I'm leading to, like last night, you don't realize that your material is like misogynistic. And if you play to women or normal people, not just edgelord comics, you're going to bomb your fucking balls off. And ultimately, I'm trying to help you here, straight white dudes who don't play to other people. You don't realize that there's a ceiling. I said it. There is a white ceiling for how far you're going to go if you're only doing edgelord material for other straight white guys. You get around women. You get around gay people. You get around black people. You get around Hispanic people, Latino people, with Latinx people, where there are plenty here, Asian people. And you do your spots in front of a greater, more diverse audience, you're going to see, oh yeah, that it does sound kind of fucking dumb. Or, whoa, I didn't realize that's a universal thing. Pow, it killed with everybody. San Diego does not, to my eye, have a lot of women. Does not have a lot of, I haven't seen, gay. You are a gay. I've not seen a lot of gay comics. And I have seen black. I've seen more black comics than I thought. But I still hear the N-word from white people. And I last night heard the F-word, referring to male sexual relationships, male homosexual relationships, numerous times. A few were like tongue-in-cheek, a few were serious, a few were, I'm quoting a story. But I heard it a fair amount. And if you're only playing for other edgelords, you're going to run into the straight white ceiling, because once you get, somebody makes the mistake of booking you on an actual real show, and you play in front of regular people who are not thinking about, and this is the catch with open mics, and I empathize with you, is it's very hard early on to stand out. It's very hard to find your voice, which is inside you, and you just need to talk about yourself and be true to that, as opposed to try to be the most edgelordy person in the whole world. It's very hard to stand out on open mic, which is why if you take a bunch of open micers, the material is graphic, it's provocative, it's gross, it's racist, it's homophobic, it's all misogynistic, rapey, pedo-y, it's all that stuff, I think in part because comics are in this early stage of trying to differentiate from one another. And this is the catch, right, about being authentic. You will differentiate yourself from everyone else if you just are yourself. If you just talk about what is true to you and your experience and your take on it, very important, I think, to have a perspective, saying, at least intimating what you feel about what you're talking about. It makes it so much better, comics. A joke where you just observe something and say it can be hugely funny. It's going to be more funny if you say, this is how I feel about that. Because that will bring the audience into your shoes, as opposed to you, just the two of you observing something. Putting yourself in it, having a perspective on it, is very important. Anyway, it's there inside of you. But if you're just edgelording out with other comics, like you can see this, you can see when comics get elevated up out of an open mic sort of stratum into booked shows, do you realize, oh, wow, And you can hear it in their sets. What I was going to say is when they get elevated up, their sets are hyper jerk-off-y and, you know, gross and things that, you know, you have to say at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday night among a bunch of other edgelords to stand out. And then the comics who understand, like, oh, I've had this conversation with other comics before, like, hey, what do you think of my set? I said, you're super funny, and it's clear you've been doing a lot of open mics because your material is written for people who are stand-up comics. It's written to work with them, meaning to gross them out, be exaggerated, whatever it is, as opposed to real people, you know, people who are paid for parking and are going to get up and go to a job, that kind of thing. They don't want to hear about jerking off for 2 hours, you know? I mean, because they have to do that when they get home. They don't want you to ruin it for them. So that's the straight white ceiling, edgelords. And there's no, it doesn't seem to be a whole lot of checking of that. Like I said, I heard the F word 8 times and there was no rebuttal. And you know what? That's part of the problem with the bucket. Maybe there were 10 gay comics in there that I didn't know about. Like I said, there were a lot of people from the Navy, so odds are it was pretty gay. But maybe there were 10 comics that were gay that had rebuttals and would have cracked back on people who used the F word. But because of the bucket, they're not going to get up. Whereas when everybody gets up or the list is known, like at Limerick, you know, am I doing glory days about Limerick? I am. Because, you know, if somebody says something homophobic, I can get like a gay comic to come up right afterward and roast them. And that's the system taking care of itself. That's not me saying I object to that or that's homophobic and you're not going to grace my stage. That's me saying, okay, you had your point. Now here's a gay person with a counterpoint and they're going to smash you and everybody's going to laugh and that will get you to think about the woke mind virus. You're going to join 4chan or Twitter. Oh, that's how it works. I couldn't say my homophobic joke at Limerick. Yes, you can. It's an Irish bar, dude. Of course you can. But then the gay guy, who's a better comic than me, made me feel terrible. Well, then he did his job. I've told you before, doing stand-up, one of the best parts about it is you have really funny friends. And I have a friend in Atlanta who I've conveyed the edgelordiness of San Diego to. And I don't know, a month ago or so, I sent him I'll send him a text from Mike. I sent him a text like a month ago saying, God, this is wild out here, man. There's so much misogyny and racism in these jokes, and I don't think these guys know what they're saying, but it's really racist and kind of anti-women. And he sent back, fine, I'll move out there. Very funny, had a laugh. And then last night I sent him one saying, dude, I heard the F word on stage like 8 times tonight. And this morning he sent back, were they talking about Israel or Palestine? He's a funny lad. Anyway, it's a very interesting endeavor, the bucket. And as I talk it out and bore you to tears with it, if you're not a comic, it diminishes the environment that, it's going to diminish the environment that is meant to serve as checks and balances. And maybe that's what you want. Maybe that's what edgelords want, is just Elon Musk laughs at this when I say this on Twitter. You know, but he's controlling the bucket too, dude. I mean, that's what Twitter is. You get bumped up, you know, it's out of the bucket. Also, you know, Twitter is, it's like an open mic. The most out on, same with Facebook. Right, the most outrageous shit is what gets elevated and surfaced by the algorithm. It's just like open micers competing with each other in a race to the bottom. Anyway, the point of this is the bucket takes away from the bucket, the live bucket, let's say. The bucket, you know what? It just dawned on me. I think I've seen two gay comics, maybe. I can think of two, one was gay, I know. One was trans, and I'm thinking of LGBTQ. Lesbian, gay, bi, trans, curious. You know what I'm saying? All the initials, all the letters from that group, right? So this, you get what I'm saying. There's not a system to check people because the bucket takes it away, because the bucket could randomly bring up eight gay guys, or it could randomly, which is unlikely, or it could randomly bring up eight more edgelords. Everybody gets up, the system can check itself a little bit. The club I was in last night, though, was, and you know what, even the venue knows, the club I was in, here's what I'll say, and then I'll talk about what the venue knows. The club I was in last night was great. Like, I'd heard nothing but terrible things about it, but my sample was limited of people that were telling me about it. It was really, I was like, oh, I could see myself having a good time in here for an hour, you know? It's low, tight, stage is right, the back's right at your back, let's go, you know, that everybody's on you. But there was a bit of an ominous start to the show because they're like, okay, are you ready? Turn off your cell phones and do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. No flash photography. I don't know who would have been taking flash photography in there last night, but they wouldn't have been getting much. No flash photography. And first, someone needs to come up and say a few words. Who I imagine is like the club manager or something like that. Anyway, she came up at the beginning. And was not happy, was not stoked, did not seem to be happy to be there. I mean, what I'm saying is, I can't vouch for her internal state, but she wasn't like, hey, everyone, welcome to the show. She was like, all right, the last week, last couple weeks, it's been getting out of control. You know, we have people in here who are actually, you know, want to see comedy, so go easy, don't... she's saying, don't be assholes. I guess she was saying, don't be edgelords. Don't harass the crowd. You know, I don't want to say crowd work. I saw one guy who I've seen before who was funny crowd work. People don't know the difference between like crowd work and abuse the crowd. And she was kind of saying, don't abuse the crowd. But she was, it was like, began the proceedings by saying that. And, I was like, oh, this. I'm not the only person that notices how edgelordy this place is, meaning San Diego. But I have my new spot in Barrio Logan. I go there every week. I buy a drink. I drank on Monday night. I haven't had anything to drink. I haven't had anything to drink the last two nights. I'm marked sober, X number of days sober. But I would go, if I were not going to have a beer, I would buy a beer at the Barrio Logan place just to get two extra minutes. 5 minutes feels like 25 minutes in San Diego. And now, I tried last night, here I am tonight. I know I have a spot at a brewery in North Park where I was last week. Remember I told you the guy did me the big solid, or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, where he just was like, yeah, you can have a spot. And I was like, oh, my God, thank you so much. But tomorrow night, I know I there are two spots where I'm going to get up. And I am beginning to email, or I'm starting this weekend to email my contacts at the clubs to say, hey, I've done my very best to try to show face, try to grind the right way, not ask for anything. But the bucket is killing me. I can't get up. And until I owned my own comedy club, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, dude, that's the owner. He does 20 minutes at the top of every show. I'd be like, you know what? You're fucking right, I do. I'm not going to kill the show, you dip, some D word. But that's where I am. I have a little PA. I was talking to my the one dude I know from different scenes who lives here. And we're just like lamenting back and forth over text. I was thinking about telling him, I have a P8. Let's go stand under a freeway or something and just run bits and gorilla mic it and get other people to do that. I just don't. In Atlanta, like when COVID started, Joe Kelly and I used to go meet at Relapse Theater in the back and just talk shit. We didn't set up a PA and run bits. But I think Joe and I met there a few times. I think Nick Murphy came over and met with us once. And you probably could hear about that somewhere on the podcast. Anyway, that's where I am. I'm ready to take my PA, my mic stand, my Shure SM58 to the streets and do bits. But despite my lamenting and complaining about the buckets, I'm making progress. I'm learning. I'm showing my face. It's not going as fast as I need it to, but it's productive. I'm moving along. I told you I liked this place in Barrio Logan on Monday night, and the sound was just incredible compared to last week. Where last week it felt like there were 5 TVs playing 5 different shows, all of them louder than the microphone into which you were speaking. And if I buy a beer for 2 extra minutes, I'm holding my phone up so we all can see I'm doing 5 minutes. It's not 3:30, it's not 4:20, it's 5 or 5:20, okay? I'm getting my money's worth for that beer. People are on the Alan Thicke vibe, calling me Alan Thicke, which just happens anytime I show up anywhere. Oh, hey, dude, you look like Alan Thicke. To which I always say, that's what white people say. You look like Alan Thicke. Black people usually say, you look like Robin Thicke's dad. It's just how you appraise the legend. Alan Thicke, who may be passed for 10 years, rest in peace. So people are like, okay, he looks like suburban dad or whatever coming in. I live in the city. I'm city dad, okay? But Barrio Logan, I'm the oldest person in the room and don't give a fuck. And the other, so I'm going out 100% me. I take my notepad with me everywhere I go. I'm working. I don't have a lot of time. I told you that. And by the way, when you don't have any stage time, you're going to make the most of it. I am not fucking around for a nanosecond. Aside from Barrio Logan, where I was like, oh my God, I thought that guy was going to say the word. Didn't everybody else think he was going to say the N-word? He was close. He was like on an escalator that was going down. It was getting close, but he got off just in time. I'm not dicking around at all. I'm making the most of those 3 or 5 minutes, whatever it is. But I'm being my true comic self. I am taking my notepad. I'm taking my pen. It's going to be out there sitting next to me. These are open mics. This is what it's for. You don't have to have your... I mean, unless you're doing like a club, like the Laughing Skull, you should have your shit ready to go because you're trying to impress the club. And you could do that if you were giving an advance notice when you were going to go up like they do, and unlike these bucket places do. I'm being my true self. I always have my pad. I always have my paper. You can see the jokes. You can see the tags. You can see the thoughts. And also, I have my reading glasses with me. So what I'm really kind of doing is an impression of Tom Simmons. I'm just in the material 24/7, which is great part about not knowing anybody and not having any comedic allies aside from one person, is I don't have to catch up. I don't have to bullshit. I don't have to talk gossip. I don't have to hear who did what or who got me too'd or what club did this. All I can do is worry about the jokes, which is how they get better, by the way. So I'm going full Tom Simmons. And if you don't know who Tom Simmons is, Google him. But he is a hilarious dude. He's a friend. He is just all about jokes. Jokes, 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 jokes. Funny, 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 funny. And he looks like a mound of papers and glasses and hearing aids. I'm just kidding. He just looks like a mad scientist about jokes when he's up there at a mic. right? He's in his notes. He's trying to say what he thought about on the way over, what he thought about in the shower, what he tweaked while he was taking a leak, like obsessed. And that's how I am when I get into it, you know, when I don't have to do all the bullshitting. So I come present with my Tom Simmons inspired presentation. This is who I am. I'm about these jokes. Here's my pad. Here's my pen. Here are my reading glasses. I have a shirt, a button-down shirt that I wear over a t-shirt when I go out at a certain temperature. And I put my readers, or my cheats, as some old people call them, I put them in my breast pocket of my button-down shirt. So Monday night, when I get called to the stages, the hallowed stages of the brewery in Barrio Logan, I walk up, with my notepad, my pen, my phone in my hand to record the set, and my reading glasses in my breast pocket. I give a fist bump to the host. I turn, and none of these mics also have a stool next to the mic, which it should be. It's comedy 101, okay? You gotta have a stool next to the mic. Maybe the place did last night, you know, where you can set your phone, you could set a drink, whatever you need. You should have a stool on stage. Even if you're running pizza, Mike, you should have a stool. If you are a showrunner or thinking about starting your mic, make sure you have a stool on stage. Some people like to sit on the stool. Not recommended unless you're, you know, Bill Cosby. And even then, like, try not to emulate everything about Bill Cosby. Okay? But the stool shouldn't really be for sitting. It should be for humping. You should use it as if it were someone you were vigorously making love to. The stool is where you set your phone, you set whatever. Black women set their purses there, you know. You set your stuff down on the stool. So there's no stool here. So what I have to do on Monday night after they call my name, I get on stage, a fist bump the host, is I have to set the pad down on the ground. And I'm, for 5 minutes, I'm going to work on 5 bits. And so I see them all. I know what they are, but I know 3 of them better than I know 2. So I have them written in a way that I can see them with also a couple lines of thoughts, of tags that I want to try. This is when I was working on Gay Mecca the other night. No, I don't mean like it's a gay Mecca. I mean it's like a gay Mecca. Like, you know what I mean? Mecca is gay. And just think about like all the people who made the Hajj are like, I thought I was going to see something else. And I didn't expect Caligula. Anyway, like work, like notes, things I want to think about when I am on stage. And I have no problem in an open mic looking down like, oh yeah, what's that other thing? Oh yeah, here. It's not super professional, but nor are open mics. If you've learned anything from this podcast over the last 3 years. Wait a minute. Yeah, last 3 years. Last 3 years this podcast is happening. So I have my notes. I have my reading glasses in my pocket. I have my phone, pen. Because there's no stool, I bend down to set the pad on the ground, at sea level. Is where I'm setting it. I'm not setting it waist high at the stool. I'm setting it all the way down. And when I do that, I fumble the phone. Okay? Now, just imagine. Old white guy, too, and that matters because white people are not the majority in Barrio Logan, to say the least. Certainly not at this open mic. I fumble the phone. It hits the ground. And as I bend over to pick up the phone, my glasses fall out of my breast pocket. Gramps is here to tell you a joke about Gay Mecca. And it just looked ridiculous. And I didn't give a fuck in the least. And I don't know. It's, all it did was for the 6 or 8 people listening, all it did was make my first joke, have a steeper climb, because you know you walk up with that. Who is that guy? Trying to think of the analog in popular culture. It used to be a cartoon. What was that guy's name? Elmer Fudd? No. What was the blind guy? Mr. Magoo. I was like, Mr. Magoo, spilling shit all over the place. And I'm like, oh, hey, let me tell you some jokes. I was the bumbling idiot. And I told my wife that. She started cracking up. I'm like, no, I was like, hey, kids, how are you doing? Here's some jokes. I'm going to spill my phone over, and then my reading glasses are going to fall out of my breast pocket. you know, it does right off the bat. It probably reduces, like, my cultural credibility and capital, I would say. And it's true, because when young people in their 20s start talking about TV shows, and I'm, you know where I am. You know, I sense the world in which we live in and talk about that. But I don't know what fucking video games you're talking about or series on YouTube. I don't, you know, because I'm old, right? And that's how it started. And my wife came home. I came home that night and she was like, how'd it go? I was like, well, here's how it started. And she was cracking up. Last night when I got home from this club that I can't wait to work, she said, how did it go? And I said, it was terrible. She started cracking up. She enjoys, I think what she enjoys is not just the horror stories I tell her, but the fact that I'm like realistic or not. It sucks because this, like, I think she likes the way I carry it. I'm like, yeah, it was terrible. No, I wasted an hour and a half of my life. But I got to park in a homeless encampment. And like, I had to almost go out because there were so many tents and dogs and people next to the passenger, like, because they're on the street. The homeless situation, as you may or may not know in California, is staggering. It's incredible. So these are sidewalks on a main street that are just populated with tents. But there's like parking meters. The sidewalks have the tents and the people and the dogs and the belongings. And then the parking meters are, you know, in between them and the street. So I parked. I almost had to not go out my driver's side door. I almost had to jump over through the passenger seat to go out into the street, so that I wouldn't have my door open and hit a tent or a dog. As it was, I just kind of shimmied out. And then walked to the club, went back, shimmied back into my car. And my wife's like, how was that? I was like, it was terrible. But she, like I said, she seems to laugh. You know, spouses, we need to signal that we have things under control to our spouses. Otherwise, it just stresses them out. That makes sense. If I'm losing my marbles about shit, my wife's gonna think that I'm undependable, not reliable, not what's the word? Independent? It's not undependable. She's gonna think I'm not dependable. So she cracks up. I'm like, no, it was awful. And guess what? There were no women. And this guy said F word 7 times or whatever. Like, yeah, and it was fun. I'm gonna brush my teeth and go to bed. And she said, when I leave the house, she goes, okay, have fun. I'm like, you don't know how open mics work. It's not about fun at all. Anyway, I'm optimistic. I'm positive. I wake up every day in the morning in a good mood. I'm going forward. And I'm going forward in San Diego comedy. Whatever that looks like right now, it's progress. And I appreciate you listening to me talk about it for, holy cow, 44 minutes. I hope you have a great weekend. And going back all the way to the top, I feel you. I feel you. You're not alone. And lots of other people feel you too. So to everyone who writes in reviews, like 15 underscore versus underscore 15, LNC, Chi-Town Save Me, Dexter, everybody out there, my listener from a year ago or year and a half ago who provided the wonderful trans perspective. And I never worked into a bit that if I were trans, I wouldn't want you to ask me my pronouns. I'd be like, remember I was like, I'd want you to be like, that is that bitch. For all of the listeners who have written in, I'm saying goodbye just for today. But if you don't write into the podcast, I'm going to say goodbye forever. Anyway, have a great weekend, and I will talk to you on Tuesday.